these $10 chicken shares. They're perfect to share with those special people in your life. Choose from 6 pieces of my Kentucky Fried Chicken, 9 extra crispy tenders, 12 hot wings, or a bunch of popcorn nuggets. So grab your buddy, your cousin, your dad, your college roommate, or my friend Joan, and head to KFC. Are you there yet? Okay, good. Now get to sharing and eating. KFC's $10 chicken shares. It's finger-licking good.
At participating KFCs only. Hot wings not available at all locations. Prices may vary. Tax and substitutions extra.
The Justice Department has conducted a sweep arresting more than 250 defendants who were allegedly involved in financial fraud of elderly victims. USA Radio Network's John Clemens has a story.
U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions called this the largest coordinated sweep in history, involving more than 250 defendants from around the globe who victimized Americans, most of whom were elderly.
These defendants allegedly robbed, defrauded more than 1 million Americans of more than $500 million.
The schemes involved mass mailings, telemarketing, as well as investment fraud to individual cases of identity theft or theft by guardians. I'm John Clemens.
Gold and Silver Pawn owner Rick Harrison attended his first CPAC. He also got a chance to address the CPAC audience. And before he addressed the audience, he talked to Fox Business about what he thinks our founding fathers would be doing regarding our personal liberties and how we seemingly are losing more and more of them each day to the government.
Oh, I absolutely believe that the founding fathers are rolling over in their graves right now. I think it was Benjamin Franklin that said, I'm paraphrasing here, that once you give up a little bit of freedom for a little security, soon you will have neither and deserve neither.
The Rasmussen Report's daily presidential tracking poll today shows that 50% of likely U.S. voters approve of President Trump's job performance. The disapproval rate is at 49%. For USA Radio News, my name is Tim Berg.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hutton Chamber Radio, entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Well, whoops. Do you know what happened? What? Hello? Are we on? Hello, sorry for that noise. Guess I must have pushed something wrong. This is Pat Smits. It's Friday afternoon, and not the way to start the program. Thanks for Chris. He came in and told me I'm back on. In any event, what's happening today? Well, if you've been outside, you know that we have, as predicted, some wet weather. And in fact, they're talking about some hazardous weather conditions and an outlook, but that's short term. And today, and I think it's probably because of the possibility of fog, this afternoon there's an 80% chance of rain and fog. I certainly know that a couple nights last week, it was really very bad. And so that's one of the things you have to be careful about at night. Again, tonight, 60% chance of drizzle and then fog, about a 20% chance of fog tonight. So just be careful. Everybody knows where the bad areas are, and just impossible to see the deer. In fact, last Saturday night when I was going home, there was a deer in the, literally, in the middle of the road. Big buck just standing there. And luckily, I was able to see him in time. But be careful out there because it really is very difficult. And the deer also can't perceive us as easily as they can when it's clear. So for tomorrow, we have a 10 to 60% chance, starting out as drizzle and then fog and then rain likely. Saturday night, 100% chance of rain. I guess that means it's going to rain. And into Sunday, again, expectation of 100% chance of rain. The low is not going to get freezing, so at least that should be good. There shouldn't be any patches of ice this weekend. By Sunday night, again, rain likely and then mostly cloudy. Should have a mostly sunny day on Monday, high of about 55 degrees. So that's going to be a rained out weekend. And let's come back after we talk, unless I give you a couple sponsors from our spots while I get a little better, get myself set up a little bit better here.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Well, again, good afternoon. I'm Pat Smits, the program It's the Law, and I'm an attorney here in Hunterdon County, but I just try to give you some of the brief news in law that's been going on for the past week. I don't have a guest today, so I'm just going to bring you some of the things that are going on, a couple of the cases that have been decided, and talk about, legal issues. So there's some top stories. Of course, there's been an announcement of the creation of an opioid addiction response unit, and that nationwide and in New Jersey is extremely important because of the terrible statistics. Also, we heard that BMW is paying $2 million to settle claims over lease refunds withheld from military personnel. So that's that was the Department of Justice announced that on Thursday, that there was a $2 million settlement with BMW Financial Services, N.A. Frankly, that in the realm of settlements, that doesn't seem to be that high, but at least there's been some recognition that they were not providing what they should have been providing to leases for military personnel. They were not honoring the refunds that they were supposed to be given. Now, the bankrupt airbag maker, Takata and its U.S. subsidiary, TK Holdings, have reached a $650 million settlement agreement. Now, that, of course, is the kind of settlement agreements that we expect to hear on some of these claims from the made, especially national claims. But as I said, we are going to in New Jersey because the New Jersey Attorney General announced that there is an expansion of the state's efforts to combat the ongoing opiate crisis. And this is, you know, really significant, hitting so many families, local families. I know people just last week overdosed on death of a 26-year-old young man. He had three young children, and that was, from my understanding, the way his addiction started. And it's not at all unusual. In fact, the percentages are fairly great at the number of people who start and actually are taking prescribed drugs. And then, of course, when they no longer need them for whatever physical ailments, they still need them because they're addicted. So let's do whatever we can to combat and support whatever efforts are being made. So if there, this terrible, terrible tragedy in Florida, it sounds as if there might be something coming out of it, something positive. Although we certainly don't know that yet, because the NRA is starting to have massive resistance against even the smallest concessions, such as raising the age of purchase of the automatic weapons, only to 21, by the way. But there are four Democratic governors who are banding together to trace illegal firearms. And that includes New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, Connecticut Governor Dan Malloy, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy, and Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo. And that is certainly a plus, because one of the problems, of course, is that states that have the stricter gun laws, people are just bringing them in from other states that have almost no gun laws. So there's also the justices in New Jersey announced that certification was granted in a legal malpractice case filed by former clients of a law firm. So they question is whether that was fees or malpractice, and whether malpractice has to be filed at the same time as fee arbitration, or I should say fee dispute cases. I guess I should explain that a little bit more. In other words, if there is a collection action against clients filed by an attorney, does the client or clients still at that point have to also assert a malpractice claim within the same suit? One of the problems, frankly, is collection. And as soon as, in many cases, as soon as an attorney attempts to collect legitimate fees, there is a threat of legal malpractice. And usually it's a frivolous claim, but it's a way to keep attorneys from not collecting on their fees. And in fact, the legal malpractice carriers ask whether or not an attorney has sued a client as part of their information they get to determine whether or not they're going to provide the attorney with malpractice insurance. And it's a real, as from an attorney standpoint, obviously legal malpractice should be remedied if it happened. But for people not to have to pay legal fees just by the threat of filing a legal malpractice when there's no such malpractice, that's really troubling. And as a result, attorneys are not representing certain clients or certain types of cases. It's another story. One of the interesting things is the ethics complaints in New Jersey, and really the number of them, and I'll talk about that another time, possibly next week, because the number of actual ethics complaints that are legitimate against attorneys are really very, very small. And what was nice to see is that the family lawyers, as people know, I'm a family lawyer, so we're often accused of not doing the right thing, and majority of the fee arbitrations are brought about because of family law cases. However, that's not the case with ethics. And the ethics cases, it's not generally family lawyers. But in any event, let's talk about some other things. And many of you who remember Clarence Thomas's confirmation hearings all those years ago, with Anita Hill testifying. Apparently now the New York, a New York magazine reported this past week that there have raised new questions about that Justice Clarence Thomas's U.S. Senate confirmation hearings. And no wonder, if anyone listened to those all the years ago, I mean, it was really what they did and tried to do to Anita Hill was really despicable. And I think it put a damper on many women coming forward with serious allegations of harassment and sexual abuse. And I guess now the Me Too situation has, you know, had many people look back as to, you know, how that was handled. And I think with most, well, it was handled very poorly. I don't know how anyone can dispute that. And Anita Hill went on to be a law professor. She never did anything about, you know, trying to exploit it. You know, she's a very classy lady, very bright attorney, classy lady. Well, we're hearing now that there's a superseding indictment came from a grand jury in Virginia, and that was, I believe, from my understanding, that's separate from the Washington, D.C. grand jury. And there's a new 32-count indictment against Manafort, Gates, and Gates, according to the National Law Journal. So I don't know more about that, but it's certainly very significant in light of, you know, the roles that these men have played in the current administration. Now, the well, there's a number of things that would only be interesting to lawyers, so I won't, you know, won't talk about those. I did mention that the BMW Financial Services, as I said, it was only $2 million, but it was to resolve alleged violations of the Servicemen's Civil Relief Act. So that was important because that part of that Servicemen's Civil Relief Act deals with what happens when, you know, for example, with BMW, it had to be car leases. And so there are certainly regulations about how these things can be handled. Apparently, well, this has to do, there's some issues with respect to law firms raising their billing rates. I don't think many people are interested in that, certainly not the people who are paying for them. There have been a number of unpublished cases in this past week, which, as I've said before, the unpublished cases are not precedential, but they can be very helpful. There was a personal injury case, Lee versus Brown, that was decided by the New Jersey Supreme Court, and that is, of course, precedential, and any case decided by the Supreme Court is important. So that the issue in that case is that the plaintiffs appealed from the appellate division's decision affirming the trial court's grant of judgment to the defendants. And the plaintiff's complaint arose from a fire that destroyed a multi-unit home, killing four residents and injuring several others. The plaintiffs alleged that the city and its electrical inspectors were at least partially at fault. So this was a suit that was blaming the city and electrical inspectors of being at least partially at fault for the fire. Apparently, they had been notified of improper wiring at the home after the owner failed to make repairs. And an inspector who was contacted, the inspector contacted another city official instead of contacting his direct supervisor about a potential shutoff of electrical service to the home. And that was due to a prior dispute between the inspector and his supervisor. Excuse me. Oh, excuse me. Talking about this personal injury case, and the inspector, instead of contacting his supervisor, he contacted someone else about a potential shutoff of electrical service to the home, and that was because he'd had a dispute with his supervisor. So after the plaintiffs filed actions against the city and its inspector, the trial court ruled that they were entitled to qualified immunity, meaning the city and the inspector were entitled to qualified immunity. And then the appellate division affirmed the trial court's decision, ruling that the inspector's actions fell within the qualified immunity statute because he was enforcing the law. And the case did not involve a failure to enforce the law that would potentially entitle the city inspector to absolute immunity. So the appellate division in that case agreed with the trial court that there was still a factual dispute as to whether the inspector acted in good faith under the qualified immunity statute. And the appellate division remanded it back to the trial court for further proceedings. And then on appeal, the Supreme Court reversed the appellate division, finding that the case did involve a failure to enforce the law, and thus the city and inspector were entitled to absolute immunity. The court ruled that this case involved a failure to enforce because the inspector failed to contact his superior to obtain a shutoff of electrical services or seek emergency relief in court for the building code violations. The court noted that the inspector's failure to enforce building codes allowed the wiring problem to linger and ultimately resulted in the fire. So that was the ruling of the Supreme Court in that case. Now, there was another case approved for publication. This was, Brunswick Bank and Trust versus Helm Management. And in that case, the defendants appealed from a Chancery Division's dismissal of their counterclaims. And what happened is the plaintiff filed suit against the defendants. And by the way, this was an appellate division case. So the plaintiff filed suit against the defendants for default on construction and development loans. And these loans were personally guaranteed by the individual defendants and also secured by mortgages on properties owned by the corporate defendants. Now remember, this is always important. If, in fact, you're getting a mortgage, there will also be a mortgage note that you individually have to sign. The real problem becomes if, in fact, you're part of a corporation, and because you're a small business, you are required to sign these loans personally and have personal liability. It's always something to at least consult an attorney about. But in any event, in this case, the matter had been previously remanded by the court for further fact-finding on the issue of whether the plaintiff had collected more than 100% of the collective debt on all the loans. After filing actions for contractual default and obtaining money judgments, the plaintiff filed foreclosure actions, ultimately obtaining a default judgment or judgments and ownership of the encumbered properties. So now on remand for a global resolution of the defendant's inability, or excuse me, for the defendant's liability to the plaintiff, the Chancery Court concluded that the plaintiff was entitled to an additional $2.7 million plus interest, attorney's fees and costs, and unpaid real estate taxes. The Chancery Court further discharged the outstanding money judgment. On appeal from the Chancery Court's decision, the defendants argued that the plaintiff's claim and claims merged into the money judgment and created only debt to be satisfied, such that plaintiff's subsequent foreclosure complaints were de facto deficiency actions. I know this gets rather complicated, and if you're involved in anything like this, you absolutely need an attorney who specializes in this area. And the defendants in that case further argued that the Chancery Court erred in not providing them with a fair market value credit for the properties sold at foreclosure. So this was very important. In other words, did they get credit for what the fair market value of the properties were? However, the court found that records suggest a plaintiff may have recovered through its collection efforts more than it was entitled to. And the court ruled that the Chancery Court erred in finding defendants' evidence of the value of plaintiff's recovery to be incompetent. Accordingly, the appellate court remanded for further fact-finding, directing the Chancery Court to determine the fair market value of the properties obtained by the plaintiff and conclude when, if ever, plaintiff was fully compensated for the outstanding debt. So this is, in other words, what they basically found here is the plaintiffs weren't entitled to more than the total amount that was due to them, and that in this case they may have actually received more than that. Okay, well, we'll be back in just a couple minutes after I play some spots from our sponsors.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon. Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity.
Back again, I'm Pat Smith's program, It's the Law, talking about some of the legal news for this week. One of the things that is always of concern is when our counties or our townships end up in litigation and have to pay a lot of money to settle because it's coming out of the taxpayers' pockets. And in this case, this week, Bergen County agreed to pay just over $1 million to settle a federal civil rights suit by 8 county employees who claimed they lost their jobs for supporting the opponent of County Executive James Tedasco III. Big problem. And there are some rights, and that is, of course, there's probably no admission of guilt by the Bergen County, but they just decided to settle. Fairly significant settlement, obviously, since it's coming out of taxpayers' money. The New Jersey State Bar Association filed a friend of the court brief in a case, Kernahan versus Home Warranty Administrator of Florida. And the brief is asking, was the arbitration clause in this home appliance service agreement unenforceable under another case for failure to provide the purchaser with adequate notice that she was relinquishing her right to bring a consumer fraud claim in court? So that's important because in New Jersey, we do have the right as consumers to bring a consumer fraud claim in court. And apparently there was in this agreement, there was an arbitration clause in the service agreement that said that there was no right to bring a consumer fraud claim in court. And of course, if you've ever signed any of these agreements, if you've read every word, you're probably among the first, because most people sign these agreements certainly not understanding what their rights are. And even if there is a, and in most of them they do talk about arbitration, but does that mean that there is a relinquishment of consumer fraud claim in court? So what the New Jersey argues that parties must fully understand the agreement before, in other words, they must fully understand that they are agreeing to waive their right and relinquish their right to bring a claim in court that there was consumer fraud. So that's a pretty significant decision that will have to be made in that, and it really will be significant irrespective of which way it is made. There was a denial. Another New Jersey court ruled that the defendant in a consumer fraud action should have heeded a 20-day filing deadline in second attempts to enforce arbitration. In other words, don't comply and to a final order, and you lose. So there are time. In every case, there's a time in which people can appeal. And there's also, most people say, well, should you appeal? And I think the case, and this is not a published case, but it was a family law case, Elrom versus Elrom, and it was an appellate division case. And it was a post-judgment matrimonial case in which the appellant, the former husband, appealed from a trial court's order, and there were a number of things that the trial court ordered, denied his application for relief, and he had requested to escrow the children's passports. That was denied. By the way, that could have and should have been part of the party's settlement agreement at the time they settled their divorce case. In other words, if a parent, any parent, thinks that they might want to take the children or a child, outside of the United States and would need a passport, it's easy to draft a provision in the agreement with respect to obtaining passports, who keeps them, etc. And also, in this case, the trial court required him to pay his former wife child support, and found that he was in violations of in violation of litigants' rights for his failure to secure a life insurance policy, which was required to secure his support obligations. So, and why is this important on appeal? Well, in this case, the appellate division ruled that the trial judge rendered a comprehensive oral opinion summarizing her findings of fact and conclusions of law. Findings of fact and conclusions of law, and are, this is something that courts are required to do. And, you know, so often, especially on motions, the court might not do it, and that is a fatal error. But in this case, the appellate court affirmed the trial court substantially for the reasons expressed by the trial judge. They also went on to note, the appellate division that is, that a reviewing court should uphold the factual findings undergirding the trial court's decision if they were supported by adequate and substantial and credible evidence on the record. And this goes back, there are other cases that have said the same thing, and that's very important. So you can't just file and get an appeal. Excuse me. Get an appellate court to reverse because, for example, in this case, the appellant's arguments concerning the order revealed nothing, and this is a quote, so wide of the mark that the appellate court could reasonably conclude that a clear mistake was made by the trial judge. And that's really the issue. Was there a true mistake? And therefore, the record in this case amply supported the trial judge's factual findings, and therefore, in light of those findings, her legal conclusions were unassailable. So very important for attorneys and clients, but sometimes especially for attorneys, you have to really take a look at whether or not the court made factual findings. And of course, if the court did not make factual findings, then on appeal, that should be a remand to the trial court, who may or may not make the same factual findings. I'm going to play a couple spots because I'm still going to sneeze.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Y USA Radio News.
President Donald Trump welcomed Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull to the White House today. After some brief remarks by the President and Prime Minister, the Prime Minister was asked a question regarding Australia's strict gun rules.
We certainly don't presume to provide policy or political advice on that matter. Here, this is you have an amendment to your constitution which deals with gun ownership. You have a very, very different history, and I will focus on our own political arguments and debates, and wish you wise deliberation in your own.
A person close to the teenager accused of killing 17 people at a Florida high school warned the FBI she was concerned that he would go into a school and just shoot the place up. That's according to a transcript of a call that an FBI tip operator received last month. This is USA Radio News.
If you're a CPAP user, soap and water cleaning may leave harmful bacteria, viruses, and mold that can make you sick. That alone will keep you up at night. Until now, SoClean.com is the world's first and only automated hands-free CPAP cleaner and sanitizer. SoClean kills 99.9% of all CPAP germs without soap, water, harsh chemicals, or even equipment disassembly. And now, you can try it risk-free for 30 days. Call 800-768-0158.
SoClean changed the CPAP experience for the better. My health has improved. It's simple to use, and I'm not worried about infections.
SoClean's revolutionary design makes it easy to clean your CPAP and protect you against CPAP-related illnesses. Plus, SoClean works with all popular CPAP devices to clean them in minutes. It really is that easy. Don't risk your health. Call SoClean.com now to try it risk-free for 30 days. Call 800-768-0158. This offer won't last. Call now. 800-768-0158. 800-768-0158.
Okay, back. It's the law. And I'm talking about a few other cases. One of the cases that came up, and I think this is interesting. Always have to be careful, of course, as a consumer, but this case, which was published, so it's precedential, Hayes, and it's Hayes versus Turnersville Chrysler Jeep, and it was an appellate division case that was published this week. And in this case, the respondent, meaning I guess I can explain, there was the underlying complaint was predicated on three theories of liability in connection with her purchase of a motor vehicle. And one was breach of contract, second was consumer or common law fraud, the third was consumer fraud in violation of the New Jersey Consumer Fraud Act. So she alleged that she was forced to return the used car that she had just purchased in exchange for purchasing a new, more expensive car. She contended that she purchased the new car at a much higher price and was unable to afford the payments, and as a result, the car was repossessed. So then the appellant, in this case, Turnersville Chrysler Jeep, moved to enforce an arbitration clause contained in the purchase agreement, and to dismiss her complaint in opposition. So at that point, the woman argued that the dealership had exerted, I'm trying to not use the legal terms of respondent, appellant, because I think it can get confusing. So if I hesitate a bit, that's why I'm trying to make sure I recall what it is. But in this case, the purchaser argued that the dealership exerted undue influence upon her, engaged in unconscionable bait-and-switch tactics. So what happened at the trial court is the trial court denied the dealership's motion to enforce the arbitration clause and its subsequent motion for reconsideration. The motion, the trial judge who heard the motion, denial was based on what she characterized as a failure by the parties to reach a meeting of the minds concerning the arbitration clause, as well as the fact that nothing, or is noting that the motion that was filed by the dealership was untimely. And although the trial court's order denying the dealership's motion to compel arbitration was appealable as of right, the dealership's only legal recourse after the time to file the motion for reconsideration expired was to file a timely appeal to the appellate division, and therefore the court affirmed the denial of reconsideration, but for reasons other than those expressed by the motion judge. So this is, again, it's very important to file time for filing and application of the rules is very important. And that's what happened in this case. Now, the Third Circuit, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, has ordered a new sentence for former Simpson, Thatcher, and Bartlett employee, finding that his 46-month sentence on insider trading charges wrongly hold him responsible for the actions of others. So this is this went up to the Third Circuit of Appeals. New Jersey is one of the states in the Third Circuit, along with New York, of course. So the there was another emotionally charged testimony, and again, this has come up many times. And apparently, this was testimony before the Assembly Women and Children's Committee, and the it voted on the bill of the New Jersey Gestational Carrier Agreement Act, and it voted it out of committee. It was also voted out of the Assembly last week, and the my friend and the New Jersey Bar Association's Deborah Gustin testified in support of the bill. And if you're at all interested in this, it is read the bill, read what is happening. And as I said, the real expert is Deborah Gustin, who's an attorney here in New Jersey. And she's an expert in many areas, but this is certainly one of them. The committee of the New Jersey legislature on last week recommended passage of a bill that mirrors a federal law that would allow successful plaintiffs in fee-shifting job discrimination actions to claim a gross income tax deduction for counsel fees and costs. In other words, at this point, the IRS is claiming that anyone who's successful must pay tax on the total award, including what they have to pay out for attorney's fees to get the award. Be back in a minute.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Excuse me, there's something. I seem to become very allergic to something in the studio today. so if I keep cutting you off, that's the reason. I'd like to talk about an immigration law case, even though that this was not published. And sometimes the cases are not published because they think they're too specific or other reasons. But this, I believe, anything with respect to immigration law now is important. And I think especially for some of the people here in Hunterdon County significantly important. And I think for all of us, we need to be a bit more aware, because I think most people have a total misunderstanding of our immigration laws. But in any event, in this case, and it's initials, again, to protect. The initials are NCT versus FTS. And if anyone ever wants more information about what I am talking about on the radio, they can feel free to call me. My name, of course, is Pat Smits, S-M-I-T-S, and my office number is 908-236-7530, because I know that I mention many things on the program, and I don't always give complete references. But this is a case that was reported, I believe, last week on the 16th. In this case, the appellant, the person who filed an appeal, filed the underlying complaint in the family part, seeking custody of his brother, who is presently age 18, and he was doing this as a predicate to obtain special immigrant juvenile status for his brother, and that was pursuant to the Immigration Act of 1990. So there is that, you know, provision in the Immigration Act. The mother of the 18-year-old did not appear at the hearing and had not responded to the complaint in any fashion. The family part judge, the trial judge, determined that the respondent had neither abused, neglected, nor abandoned the brother, and therefore rationalizing that that requiring her children to forego an education and work to support the family was reasonable. So in addition, the family part found it was not in the brother's best interest to be placed in the custody of a person who was an undocumented immigrant, because if the brother was deported, then the younger brother would be living alone in this country. Finally, the family part judge stated that it was not credible that no other sibling, the sibling was in Guatemala, would step in and help out their brother if he returned home. Lots of assumptions there, and I suppose cases like this are always interesting to me because of my experience living in Guatemala and having some sense of what was going on, of course, and what is still going on. So the family part judge stated that it was not credible that no other sibling in Guatemala would step forward to help out their brother if he returned home. Well, I don't know how you could make that one. However, I was pleased to see that the appellate division reversed, holding that under New Jersey law, neglect of a child included willfully failing to provide a child with regular school education. Now, as the brother was removed from school at the age of six in order to work, the court found that such could be determinative of neglect. Now, of course, in support of the mother, it's although six is very young, young children in Guatemala are forced to work or required to work just because of the poverty and the level of poverty and the fact that people do not have enough money to feed their children without their children also working. And of course, in this case, we don't know what type of work the child was doing. But in any event, I think most people, if not all people, would say that a child of six should be in school. Moreover, the appellate division found that the trial court's concern that that the brother filing the appeal was not eligible to take custody of his brother because presently he was an undocumented immigrant was unfounded. Thank goodness. I'm sorry I'm showing my bias, but I found that the trial court decision in this case was really pretty outrageous. And in light of the deficiencies in the trial court's findings and rulings, the appellate court reversed and remanded with directions, important, with directions to the trial court as to how to proceed in this case. And I think, you know, what is and should be important is that this brother, whether or not he was documented, he wanted to become the guardian of his younger brother so he could obtain special immigrant juvenile status for him. And just as an aside, the fact that if this boy had been sent back to Guatemala, you know, I guess I frankly personally don't think anybody should be sent back. But that's because I know what many of them would be going back to. So just a couple other, a little break for a couple more spots from our sponsors, and then we'll be back shortly and then go to the news.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Okay, we're back. Not much more time, but quickly maybe I can get this in. And that is approved for publication on February 14th. And it was from, the decision was written by Judge Koblitz in the Appellate Division. In fact, I appeared before Judge Koblitz on February 14th, so. This was the same day, well, it was approved for publication, I should say. And actually, that was, I appeared in Jersey City before Judge Koblitz. Maybe I won't have time to talk about this, but I will say to anyone, if you are in Jersey City, take the time sometime to go to the Brennan Courthouse. It is just a magnificent courthouse, truly is. And I will play the news, and we'll be back. And I'll talk about this case next week. But we'll be back right after the news, and we'll have my friend Bill Wolfson and I will be holding the fort today. So stay tuned.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Yeah.
USA Radio News.
President Donald Trump addressed the CPAC crowd earlier today. Now, the almost hour-long speech hit pretty much everything from the economy to our military to keeping us safe. The president also talked about making comments for the first time regarding the late Reverend Billy Graham. The president said all this talk of keeping our kids safe at school all really boils down to one issue.
And you know, if you think about it, most of it's just common sense. It's not, do you love guns? Do you hate guns? It's common sense.
The United States today unveiled what it's calling the largest North Korean sanctions to date as the Trump administration continues to seek ways to isolate the rogue nuclear state. The new sanctions are aimed at disrupting North Korean shipping and trading companies and vessels. The Treasury Administration said that they are determined through these efforts to increase the pressure on the North Korean regime and show Kim Jong-un that there's no new path for him but to denuclearize. This is USA